I'm Diana, and I love printing and design, typography and branding, books and publishing. I've traveled the world learning about trends to share with my students and with my readers. But I haven't forgotten where I started, writing papers about paper on paper. And now I've created a podcast to share what I know with you. So let's talk paper scissors.
From the Middle Ages to the Middle East, from Futura to Fright, join us on a journey across the type universe and go where no designer has gone before. Welcome to an incomplete history of type. Name? Ariel. Release date? 1982. Designer? Robin Nicholas. Classification? Neo-Grotesque Sans Serif. Owned by Monotype Corporation. Claim to fame? The Helvetica Copycat. The story begins in the late 20th century, a time when fonts were battling out for supremacy on the newly emerging digital landscape. Enter Arial, the underdog sans-serif font with dreams of dethroning the reigning champ Helvetica. But before we get into the juicy drama of the 90s and the harrowing match between Arial and Helvetica, Arial had a much humbler beginning. In the later half of the 1970s, a new print revolution was on the rise, the in-office laser printer by tech giants IBM and Xerox. The competition was hot, and there arose a need for more differentiation between print equipment providers. Enter the contenders, Linotype and Monotype, the heavyweight corporations of the typographic world. Times New Roman and Helvetica reigned supreme for design work, but Monotype lacked the rights to Helvetica. With Xerox choosing Linotype for licensing to Helvetica, Monotype began forging a sans-serif equivalent of its own for IBM. And so Arial was born, a bold challenger to Helvetica, ready to shake up the digital font landscape. You see, at the time, Helvetica was all the rage, a staple for everyday printing and design, but its costly licensing fees made it hard for designers and developers to gain access. In the 1980s, Arial was Microsoft's answer to Helvetica, courtesy of typeface designer Robin Nicholas. To understand the success and controversy of Arial, we must first understand the monopoly that was Microsoft. Microsoft was the leading tech giant of the 90s, having 90% of the PC market share using the Windows operating systems. In 1992, Microsoft releases Windows 3.1, which embraced TrueType, a new font system developed by Apple in 1991. But Microsoft faced a dilemma between two fonts, Helvetica, a beloved classic, versus Arial, an affordable lookalike. Alas, a decision was made. Windows 3.1 released, introducing three new TrueType fonts, Times New Roman, Courier New, and Arial. Meanwhile, for Apple, a different story unfolded. They too adopted TrueType in their Mac OS 7 operating system, but with a twist. They chose Helvetica, dutifully paying the licensing fee to Linotype. As the desktop publishing industry boomed, Windows 3.1 flourished, becoming a tech sensation, from corporate to personal use. Yet behind the rising popularity lurked Arial, infiltrating screens and documents worldwide, riding on the coattails of Microsoft's success. Its fame stemmed not from admiration, but from a strategic dodge of licensing fees, a font born from necessity rather than acclaim. Aiming to provide a similar aesthetic but with lower costs, Helvetica and Arial are nearly identical. But Arial has a softer feel, with diagonal stroke endings and simpler flourishes, giving the typeface a more open appearance. Each of Arial's characters has the same width and height as the characters in Helvetica. When comparing the fonts at larger sizes, the differences are more noticeable, but once scaled down, the two become nearly indistinguishable. Mark Simonson, renowned typographer responsible for creating the iconic typefaces Proxima Nova and Felt Tip Roman, weighed in on the issue in his published 2001 journal called The Scourge of Arial. In his journal, Simonson expresses his dislike for the font and calls Arial a shameless imposter and a parasite who owes all of its fame to Helvetica. The problem was not that Arial was similar looking to Helvetica. It was more about the principle, argued Simonson. At the time, copycats of Helvetica had already flooded the market by smaller type foundries and designers across the globe, all offering the same thing, lower fees for a nearly identical lookalike. Why pay more for something even the trained eye may struggle to identify? You see, Monotype was a respected type foundry with a long-standing history in typography since 1887. to create a cheap knockoff of a mainstream classic was not in anyone's 1992 bingo card. To Simonson, Ariel was more malicious than a direct copy. He argued Ariel masquerades as something different, that it implies that it is not Helvetica, but it is something completely new, all while silently substituting for its once-loved, now-abandoned, predecessor. This began to divide the design world. Friendships were tested, alliances were forged, arguing passionately over the ethics of typography, where Helvetica was seen as good and Ariel was seen as bad, and I hope you can sense my use of air quotations in that statement. Its ruthless history left a bad taste in the mouths of many designers. Many looked upon Ariel as cheap, basic, and only to be used by non-professionals. But are these accusations even true? Is it possible that Simonson's perspective might be influenced by personal bias? As independent designers, we may hold this narrative to be true, based on the feeling of having one's designs appropriated by a major corporation for preservation of a suitable bottom line. Monotype director Henry Allen denied all accusations of Microsoft opting for licensing affordability, stating that they had spent enough to finance a small country on the licensing and development of Ariel itself. Creator of Ariel, Robin Nicholas, states he would never recreate an existing font, and that was not his intention when designing Ariel. Amidst all the chaos and controversy, in the end, Ariel remains, unapologetically embracing its role as the people's font, found in emails, Word documents, reports, menus, magazines, and clothing across the world. Love it or hate it, there's no denying Ariel's presence. Originality in design is a complex issue, and this is a story that exemplifies that. If Ariel is considered a ripoff of Helvetica, then somewhere down the line, Helvetica is a ripoff of something else. I'm sure Atkinson's Dens Grotesque would love to put in their two cents, but perhaps that's a story for another time. It seems to me that the hate for Ariel is just another classic case of jumping on the bandwagon. At least the wagon for Ariel is not as crowded as the bandwagon for Comic Sans. And that is a complete history of Ariel.